All right, hello, welcome everyone. I'm Erin Schaefer. I'm the Graduate Assistant at the Women's Center, and I'd like to welcome you to our Spring 2012 Women on Wednesday series, Exploring and Making Visible Women's Intersecting Identities. This semester's series on women's intersecting identities will explore the rich layers of women's multiple identities and how these intersections shape their lived experience and perceptions. A few items before we get started. If you please turn off your cell phones, and please stay seated until 12:50 as a courtesy to our speakers. Also, if you can fill out the evaluation forms, we use your feedback for future programming. Also, in honor of National Women's History Month, Urvashi Vaad will be presenting Winning Marriage and More, Emerging Challenges for Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Equality next Tuesday, March 20th, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock in the Atwood Ballroom. Urvashi Vaad is a respected attorney, author, and civil rights activist, and a leading national figure in GLBTQ rights movement. If you'd like more information, you can pick up a flyer in the back. Finally, next week's session has shifted as Emerging Voices will not be able to present. Instead, we'll be facilitating a panel presentation titled The Question of Mothering, To Be or Not to Be. Our session today is titled Competing Identities. Our panelists will discuss the contradictions and challenges required by society's identity markers as mutually exclusive categories. Our panelists today are Marie Flores and Tierra Stevenson. Marie Flores is a Chicana feminist and a senior at St. Cloud State University, majoring in sociology, with a minor in women's studies. Flores is a co-chair of MECHA, who has a passion for social gender, environmental, and queer issues. Tierra Stevenson will be graduating May 2012 with a BS in Community Psychology and a minor in African American Studies. She is current secretary for the Council of African American Students, and she will be attending Stout University in the fall to pursue an MS in Marriage and Family Therapy as preparation for establishing her own practice in a low-income minority community. We are very grateful to have them here with us today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Mary Flores and Tierra Stevenson.
Thank you. Welcome to this Women on Wednesday, Competing Identities, also can be known as Women with Multiple Identities. When you think about competing identities, it's when you realize that you have one or more identities that you can identify with, that you can see yourself in within that group, within that social class category. And depending on what privileges and what value society places on those identities, they can be competing, whether you value one over the other, whether you identify yourself as one or the other, or whether you identify yourself as both when you have the multiple identities. So what we'll be talking about in this presentation is a couple words that helps understand what's the process of like realizing that you have multiple identities and how that works. And also, we're going to answer a few questions about how we've experienced multiple identities, how we explain our identities, and what we want to see from our community or what we have seen in regards to that. So the first term is intersectionality. If anyone's familiar with it, great. If for those who aren't, it is the multiple and often simultaneous interactions of different social and class categories. In the box next to it, there are some examples of what those categories may be, including race, class, gender, sexualities. The list can go on and include ethnicity and whatever else you may think that you may identify with as well. Basically, intersectionality, again, the identities, they intersect with one another. You are not just one. You are more than one. For instance, if you take an example of a woman that does identify with the LGBTQ community, they do identify as a woman, of course, but that identity as well with the other community is also part of them. They intersect in a way they have to interact with both communities, whether you're inside and when you're out with mainstream as well. That also ties in with cultural pride, when you pride yourself in identifying with the multiple identities or with whatever identity you present yourself with. With the multiple identities, competing identities, it does bring up intersecting oppressions as well that come with each identity category. For taking that same example, for women who do identify as women, present themselves, I am a woman, not just, by your name, there are certain connotations that come with that identity that's given by mainstream society, by the dominant group. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with them, whether it's like femininity or motherhood or domesticity, certain kinds of connotations like that. And also, if you were to take that same identity as also intersecting with LGBTQA community, that also brings other connotations with it as well, especially with the controversy going on in the mainstream about what's going on with that community and the lack of understanding of that, and really the lack of questioning of what that identity is for the person and not for the community as a whole. And that's how it affects the person within the community, as within themselves and the community. The next term is passing. That is when a person of one ethnic or racial group attempts to be accepted into a different, usually dominant racial group. And this can also be not racial. This can also be a different category as well. There has been like common media references as women passing as men or trying to pass as men or act like men. And that is because there is certain privileges that come with being a male in our society, and just demonstrating those kind of qualities like assertiveness and power and strength that aren't usually associated with the female gender. So of course, when females do show themselves as powerful, strength, you know, it is very easy that mainstream society does say, oh, well, you're trying to pass like a man or act like a man, when actually these characteristics can be example of any type of identity. They aren't exclusive. Now, passing may be provoked from racism, desire for privilege, or security. So when you do have intersecting or competing identities, and you are dealing with that interacting oppressive from both identities or just from the one that you more clearly identify with, there is a vulnerability that comes with that oppression, and it does cause one to want to seek to have like that privilege, just to have that security, to not feel vulnerable to outside forces, and to be able to have control over how they represent themselves, not for things to be represented upon them. Now, though this may allow a person to be accepted into the new group, they do risk losing their connection to that other identity. For instance, if we take that same example as for women who do demonstrate these qualities, if they do choose that they are going to pass and that they do want to choose that they're going to act like a man to be able to gain this privilege, to gain the security that men have in our society, then they risk losing that connection to women, to the woman that they are, and to everything that comes with that for them, not just what society claims for that gender category, but for them as well. They aren't able to explore that because that focus is now towards being something else, being something that is rewarded in our society. There are also those who pass who are outsiders within. Now, for those that are outsiders within, they do pass, or they claim, or they knowingly do pass. They do demonstrate certain qualities to be able to get to almost infiltrate the dominant group, but their main goal is to eventually be able to encourage that other identity, the other identity they bring in, whether it is that being a woman or whether it is being from a different racial and ethnic group or whether it is their sexuality, to be able to bring that in and take away the negative connotations that come with that, that they can also identify with this community and they can also be assertive and strong and educated and demonstrate power. And it doesn't have to be only to that male identity. It can be for them as well. So when we were talking about, or when I was talking about why that vulnerability, that loss of control, it brings up marginalization, and that's people who are marginalized are subordinated based on their race, class, or gender, and that group has no power to control their representation or privilege. That is done by the dominant group. So when we were Okay, we're gonna leave it. So again, when we identify as you know, as, when we identify as women or when we identify as male, there's certain representations that come with that that we don't really have control over. That is something that society as a whole, and especially the dominant, has influenced for our society to get to recognize when they think about that certain identity, whether it is femininity, masculinity, and certain other characteristics. And women with multiple identities are further marginalized, not only for one identity as a female or as a woman, but also as whatever other identity they have, whether or not they choose to have it or not. For instance, take myself. I am a woman, but I'm also a woman of color. Whether or not I express myself as that, that is automatically imposed on me once people meet me. And all those connotations of what comes with whatever my ethnicity is or whatever my ethnicity is presumed to be comes on with it as well. And that's the main issue of problem with today's society is that we've had a long history of marginalization, of discrimination, of oppression, and instead of learning to embrace difference and to understand it and to celebrate it, we are trying to move towards looking past it, that there are no differences, we're the same as everybody else, and that's why we should be treated as everybody, as the same as everyone else. When the thing is that we are different, and that we and those with multiple identities know that we are different, and there is no reason why everybody needs to be the same to be treated equally. Everybody should be able to identify with whatever they feel like they fit in and value that and feel secure and not have any type of vulnerability that comes with that. And so if we were to be able to get that, this would honestly be helpful to everybody as a whole, if we were actually able to celebrate our differences and be able to meet one another based on what our first impressions are when we meet the person, not what we think when we hear how they identify themselves. Oh, I'm a woman, or I'm from this area, or I'm from this, or what our physical features are. And that's something that we want to see more, and that we have been seeing more, again, celebrating differences. But again, it needs to be definitely focus a little bit more on people, on getting to know people in general, and trying to get away from like what characteristics, and really challenging ourselves as individuals to forget the characteristics that are associated with certain identities, and really just get to know people for who they are and what they express as that, as, and what they want their identity to represent. So next, we have a couple questions that we thought to be able to, so me and Tiara can share our own experiences with having multiple identities. All right. So the first question is, how would you describe your identity?
First, I would say that I'm African American. And I do identify with African American because I recognize my African heritage. I'm not directly from Africa. My ancestors were slaves. But through my education and learning about Africa and having friends from Africa, I'm no longer ashamed or anything to be African. I'm proud of my African heritage. So that's why I do include it in my identity. And I'm a woman, of course, a young woman, lower class, and now that I'm educated, maybe I can move up on the socioeconomic status, but the other things are not going to change, but that's pretty much how I would identify myself.
It's really important when you brought up the socioeconomic status, the class, identification with class, because personally for myself, I wouldn't bring that in to when I describe my own identity, though that is a class that I'm a part of. I'm also part of like a low income class. You would say, and I mean, either I'm not, and it might be that you're for future experiences, depending on my mannerisms or my dialect, or even like, you know, where my access to education was, that identity may be assumed when I do meet people, like, oh, like, this is that this person does come from this sort of class background, and then what comes with that kind of background as well from being lower class, and usually it's negative, like, it's all, you know, with lower class, it's usually things like they're not educated or they don't work hard enough, and that's why they haven't reached this certain point and things like that, which I would definitely not associate myself with, and eventually people would see that. But that's why personally, like, it would not be part of my identity to begin with. As far as how I would describe it, I'm a woman, I am a Chicana, and I would definitely include being a feminist, being part of that community. That all comes with a bunch of different representations depending on who you ask. But you know, the more important thing is my process and how I've been able to claim that identity for myself and how I'm able to express what my identity is within those terms. And that's what I like to share with people about what I mean. Those are the terms, but I take them differently. They're very complex within the term as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up your perspective about the social class. The only reason that I would identify with being lower class is that, you know, of course I do come from a lower class background, but I feel like no one can place a value on you but yourself. And I feel like claiming that and not playing into the stereotypes and just being true to yourself can eliminate some of those stereotypes that are associated with being lower class. And I want to be one of those people that make people change their minds about lower class people. You know, we can be classy, we are educated, and I want to be someone who breaks barriers and just brings a new description of lower class.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, what event or experience sparked your awareness of your identities?
Well, I stated before that my education had a really big influence on my identity. Growing up in America, the school education system is not very informative about African history. We learn nothing about Africa. We do learn a little bit about civil rights and slavery, but African-American children, they don't have anything to identify with as far as academic achievements, science and math. They don't have a person to identify that with. And so I think it's important to teach our children what we learn in college. And from what I learned from college was that we have so much more history than we thought we did. We're achievers. We are successful. We've invented so many things. We've contributed to American society. And so that is probably the biggest thing that influenced my identity. I think it's so important to know who you are and know who you come from and be able to be proud of the people that you come from. And like I said, the people that don't go to college, maybe they don't get that experience to learn as much as I did, which is unfortunate, but I feel like it's my responsibility to now go back to my community, teach my children, teach my family members, teach the children in the community about where they come from and all the things that's happened to us in the past besides slavery, because that is not the only thing. And teach them about the successes that we have. Teach them that we can be successful in science and math and that we can invent things and that we're not in this box where we only have athletic abilities or singing abilities or dancing abilities, that we can be so much more.
Yeah. And going off of that too, about having that, I personally, you know, being native Minnesotan, you know, I definitely grew up in an environment that did lack that outlet to be able to understand my identity and what came with that. At first I figured that everybody was just. With everybody was the same, and then I'd say the experience that caused my awareness was when I was I'm pretty when I was in grades, no, sorry, when I was in middle school, and I would hear very often that I was the whitest Mexican people knew. And I was very caught off guard, because here I am thinking that, you know, we're all just students, or we're all just a bunch of girls, or we're all just, and no, it's like I am, you know, it's like there's something else that's being associated with me that I really didn't, you know, I didn't even know about, and I wasn't really even sure what brought that on, because as far as I knew, I did everything pretty much the same. And so once I was aware of that, then it was a very confusing process, because I just did not see how that was my identity. I had no resources to be able to identify that, other than that, yes, my family did, they did come from Mexico, but I was born here. I went to school here. I only speak Spanish at home. I don't practice any type of, you know, certain rituals, or, you know, certain characteristics that other people did that were stereotypical of Mexican women or Mexican youth, where, you know, it's always with families or with parties and things like that. And when I came to St. Cloud State, that I was going to take an ethnic studies course, and it was Chicano studies that I was able to have. That information available to me, like, oh, hey, there are actually other, you know, Mexican Americans that were here. We actually, you know, we were actually already in California when the settlers came, and we've been here even before everybody else. And now we have a history here, and now we actually have a history of struggle. Because that's another thing that comes with the process, is that when you have no resources, when you have nothing to tell you that you should be proud of that identity that people are giving to you, you think that, you feel like it's bad, like it's negative. It's like, well, why isn't anybody else identifying as Mexican-American or Mexican or Chicano, or why don't I know any of this stuff? Or if they were here, then why don't I know about them? Why haven't I heard about anything? They must have not done anything to be heard. They must have just been, you know, they must have just gone with the flow. So, And that was the end of it. And it wasn't until I had access to higher education where I was able to see that, no, there actually has been a very long struggle. We do have a history, and a very strong one. We are very proud people of having those intersecting identities, of that, yes, we do have ancestry in Mexico, which includes this part, which includes California and part of the United States. And we're bringing that into now the new culture that came in when Europeans decided to settle here, and we struggled to be able to take the good from both sides and be able to have our new lives to coexist with one another. And that has been hard, because that difference in culture has not been encouraged necessarily in our society, and so, like, I was very hesitant to associate myself with that, So it's very interesting now when I still hear kind of the same things when I visit home, or even like through some family, about that kind of, about when I identify myself as a Chicano versus, oh, well, it's a Mexican American, or no, you're American, you were born here, and you don't have any, you know, you weren't, you know, we don't have ancestors that were from like California or anything else. We actually come from Mexico, so if anything, you're Mexican. But, you know, I have, you learn higher education that you actually, it's like you have a say in what that is. It's not what all these other factors are. It's like you actually can decide what you want to identify as, where you fit in as, and if I were to decide that, oh, I fit best, you know, it's like, okay, I'm Mexican, then I would, but I don't, and I'm going to go with something else. And though it is, it's interesting trying to explain it, but it's something that, you know, I feel very strongly about, and I'm happy to correct people when it does come with, you know, when things like that do come up, like, oh, well, you're da 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 da, you know, you're so well spoken for a Mexican American. It's like, oh, well, most of us are. We know English. We're very good at it. So, and we've been here quite some time. We not all just came over. So
yeah, I wanted to add to that. I can relate to what Maria is saying also. In the Black community, they have this thing where, you know, if you don't act black, I don't know what that means, then you're kind of ostracized. And when I go home and I'm with my family in Minneapolis and I speak proper English, then they say, oh, you sound like a white girl. And it kind of throws me off a little bit because it's ironic that we fought so long for education, and now that I have it, you know, I'm getting teased for it, and it's just like, what are we doing? And so I think it's important to not put yourself in a box. Just because I'm black doesn't mean I have to, you know, speak slang all the time. I can speak proper English because I've learned it, and I'm going to use it for my advantage. And so, yeah.
And it doesn't, and I'm pretty sure, like, it doesn't mean, like, we take any less pride.
Yes.
And who we are, and you know what that other identity is, and it's not that we have anything against, you know, anybody using a certain type of slang or dialect or accent. I mean, people can do what they choose to do, and that's all we want for us as well, to be able to understand. It's like, okay, well, if we, you know, we speak the way they do, we have the accent that we do, it doesn't mean that I can't relate to you on the same level that you're coming from, just yeah. Because these certain characteristics that we display don't necessarily match, right, like on the surface.
Yeah, I never think that I'm better than anybody when I go home. Some people get educated and they move out the urban areas and they forget about where they come from. But that's why I want to go back and have my practice in the urban communities to help bring these people out of poverty.
This ties into our next question, which is how would you like your community to show support to you as a woman with multiple identities? Yeah. And we touched on this, you know, like within each other community, again, you know, tying back to that, you know, intersectionality, we do have other communities that go that specifically go with our identities, and it is a struggle when you do try to intersect both of them. You're not just one or the other, and certain people do, they don't necessarily share the same kind of intersections that you do. And so, like, when we're talking about, like, especially, you know, even language, something as simple as that, you know, there can be some hostility with that, because it's almost taking as, you know, a lack of pride or a type of assimilation, a type of submitting yourself to that dominant group, and forgetting about that struggle. Even though, like, on the other side, like me and Tiara are saying, like, we're thinking the other way around. Like, well, there is, you know, we're educated now. We've struggled for this, so now, like, we're kind of confused on exactly like what the issue is. And but that's the thing. I mean, there's always conflict, and there's always people that have certain associations with their identity, and when they meet other people who identify as that, they want to be able to see those same associations, and sometimes they want to see them on multiple levels, when maybe only we can do two or three, or maybe we just share, you know, an experience that shares us together, that ties us together in that identity, but we can relate to each other in another one, like, oh, we both come from low-income families, or that, you know, we're both women, or that, you know, we both have, you know, haven't had, you know, the most resources to be able to, you know, go as far as we could, things like that. And I'd probably say that, I mean, thankfully, like, since I came to St. Cloud State, I was able to find that community to help me, to support me in that process of really of dealing with those intersectionalities that I have. Because when you do realize that you do have multiple identities and they're working within each other, you kind of feel like you have to give one dominance over the other. And if you don't, then you're not really serving them the most that you could. And you can be really critical, at least for myself, I'm not sure if it's for you, but you can be really critical on yourself about what type of characteristics you show, and when you show them, and in what environment. And it's a lot to think about. And when you get it, and when you finally find the community that understands that, you know, you can, you know, your identity is your thing, however you express it, whenever you want to express it, I'm not going to tie anything to it, I'm just here to help you with your process, and I'm gonna, you know, we're gonna feed off each other, and we're gonna work through what we're gonna what we're doing, and we're going to find, and what maybe we'll find new identities on the way that we'll agree with, and maybe we won't, but, you know, we're just here to be that support for each other. It's not about, like, necessarily, like, finding that commonality through what identity that we are today, because identities change, as you know, as I said, that experience in middle school. I mean, if that never have happened, who knows if I would have really been aware that I had this other identity that I technically either was gonna acknowledge myself or was gonna have people acknowledge forever outside without any say for me, because I would never have taken the initiative, excuse me, to really learn about it and to really involve myself and be able to represent it. I would just go along with whatever it was and continue with the ones that I was familiar with. I can't say how much, you know, you appreciate when you find those communities that are able to support you and whatever process you are, whatever stage of your identity you are, or your change in identity, as, you know, like I said, as the process goes, as you grow up and as you learn new things.
Sometimes I think that Black women are on the bottom of the food chain, if you will. If skin tone was on a spectrum and the darkest was, you know, the lowest status, and then on top of that, you're a woman. So sometimes I think that we have it bad, and we've had it bad for centuries. And in my community, you know, we come from a line of very strong women, and it's been passed down since slavery. Since our men were demasculinized, we had to kind of step up to the plate and take care of the home and bring in the money and take care of the kids and do all of that. And all of that's been passed down. So in my family, for instance, I have 7 aunts, and all of them are, you know, pretty much single moms, but everyone takes care of their business. We're all strong women. We're just very strong. And sometimes we could get knocked for that, which is sad. But I guess I would just like to see just more support in general, especially from our men. I don't know what's up with this rap music, but I definitely don't agree with all the bees and all of that. It really gets under my skin, because if anything, we should be getting support from our men, since we don't have it from society. And it saddens me that our men will be degrading us like this, because we need their support, just like we need everyone else's support. So I think that would be the biggest thing. We need our families to come together. We need our men and our women to come together so we can rebuild that family structure. A strong community, I think, is built on a strong family. And since we have so many broken homes, I believe it's over 70% of African-American children grow up in single-parent homes. And my goal as a marriage and family therapist is to help those couples come together and stay together and build healthy relationships with their children, so that hopefully, you know, we can build a stronger community.
And tying into, you know, and that's definitely, I mean, through education, we are able to understand, you know, like why that kind of support is lacking. It's the same, you know, in the Latino community, there are issues with machismo, where it is, you know, it's like women have always, there is that, you know, that standard of woman that we've always been kind of the silent but strong. We're in the background, we take care of things, but it's like we value that everybody else is taken care of, and that is what makes us happy. You know, if it's selfish, if we were to bring ourselves into that mix at all, it's like, oh, well, we're about our family comes first. If our family is doing strong, if our men are strong, if our children are strong, then we are strong. We feed everybody else first and we eat last, even though we make the food and we clean up after it. And you know, and that it's that kind of thing that, you know, it's those sort of basically norms within that community are myths that make it that make it really hard, especially for our men to be able to support us, because they are. I mean, there's just that continuation of like, oh well, this is what women are, and this is what women who are in this group are, and this is what you should. And then it kind of goes into this is what you should expect from them. So then when they see that, no, well, we are strong, and yes, our family comes first, and yes, we want them to be strong. We also matter. What we want is also important, and we need to be healthy in ourselves as well, to make sure that our families are healthy, to make sure that our men are healthy. And that's hard for some people to understand, because it's not the conversation that's going on. It's just the same, like, oh well, you're strong and you don't have to say anything about it. And the thing is that no, well, we are strong, and I'm going to say something about it, because you do deserve that recognition, and you should be a support. You should be encouraging that I have this strength, and that I am going to take care of myself for your sake as well, that I am going to be your partner and not just somebody and not just your support. You know, of course I am that as well, but I'm also here with you. I'm also here fighting this fight and doing this struggle. And I mean, it's the same with our other women. Like I said, my group has been, you know, my support has been really awesome in that sense too. But you do interact with other women that they share the same identity as you, but they take it in a complete different way, and then they don't support the way that you're expressing it, because it's not traditional, and there's a fear of losing that tradition, that the traditional values that we have. I mean, of course we don't want to lose those, but for me, at least, it's that there can be a compromise that we can have both, and that, you know, this life is to, you know, keep progressing, like, from this point, and keep on going for the better. I mean, now we know more. It's not that we're trying to get rid of our traditional values. Of course we want to keep them, but we want to make them so they're more equal, so they're more egalitarian, so everybody is able to share that. Nobody feels like left out, or that things are unequal between, like, having power and having a say and being able to make decisions. It's like, we need, as individuals, I feel like we do need to have that control over how we feel and what we say and what we do and our actions, and that they're not just being directed upon us or influenced upon us or expected of us, that we can actually decide what we're going to do, and that we're going to be able to depend on our support and our families to be there for us, and to understand that that is what we need to do.
So,
yeah, so
I guess we can take questions now, if anyone had questions. Ah, come on.
Yes, Vero. So the question was to go into more detail about what is Chicano, what my identity of Chicano is, and what I mean by that. And for when I identify as myself as Chicano, it is because I believe in the philosophy of Chicanismo, in which is that it's about the people, and it's about us being united, and being united in the sense that we all deserve the same happiness, and that we and the same things, and that we are united in the struggle to be able to get that, and that we are on the same page. It's not an individual process anymore. It does matter what's going on with my community and those who identify as Chicano, but also my fellow human beings as well. It does matter what's going on, and I need to, and I care, and I want the same happiness as I hope people want for me. So it is. So that's what, you know, for my identity, it is just about, you know, about that, you know, power to the people, that united in the struggle, and also united in, the felicidad, the happiness, and being that support for each other, and, you know, getting back to that, getting back to our roots, and that oneness with people and the earth, and, you know, our spirits.
Tandy?
Do you sometimes feel the pressure to assimilate when you hear
Well, like, for me, I just say to myself, I'm going to act professional, and that's as far as it's going to go. I'm not going to compromise any further. I'm Black. I'm going to, you know, act how I want to act, but it's going to be in a professional manner. I don't think that, you know, you have to necessarily act white, but you do have to be professional, and there's a boundary. So I just keep that in mind and just stay true to who I am.
As far as the question goes, it was like whether we feel... if we feel pressured that we need to act a certain way while we're in higher education, and when we think about our future careers, even though we do, even though we appreciate those, that other side of us, especially like how, you know, our language, our slang, our accent, but that we understand that it needs, that we need to have that, but that we understand that there needs to be a professionalism if we are to succeed in higher education and in our future careers. Is that right? Yeah, and I would say...
Did you ask?
Well, the thing is, to me, the fact that we're saying, is professionalism then saying that the, you know, speaking proper, is that professional?
Right.
The way we speak at home, we consider professional. That's what I'm saying. Do you think it's kind of forced on to you to say, okay, yeah, because I'm speaking this way instead of speaking, you know, my language, my traditional way I should speak for my family, it's not proper or
yeah. Yeah, so just the mainstream idea of what professionalism is and why it's one thing and not the other, why it can't be multiple things, why it is proper English and so forth, even, you know, ways of dressing. And I would definitely say that it is, at least personally, I feel that it is something forced upon myself, and it's forced upon everybody as we learn. You know, especially right now being a senior, I am trying to get ready for my career and, you know, going and thinking, you know, going to grad school. And that is one of the things that you hear about. It's like you're going to learn to develop a professional persona. And that's already given. Like, people are going to teach me what it is to be a professional. And I'm expected to act, and I'm expected to be able to perform that duty. And, like, you know, and so it's important, you know, perform, you know, the duty. They are going to teach me, and that's something that's already given. And I do not believe that there isn't any hierarchy to any type of language. There definitely, our society has, you know, there has been studies that show that for some reason, we do prefer a certain type of language. I mean, proper English, you're able to understand it better, I think, was like the main consensus. Like, oh, you can understand like every word that's coming out. Whereas with slang, it can be a bit harder if you have an accent from a certain area. It can seem a bit harder if you're not native. Whereas like that proper English, you can understand like cross borders, you know what's going on, and that's why it's promoted as the ideal, when actually it should just be another form of language. But I mean, and that's another thing, like, our, you know, through technology, we're kind, you know, us as individuals, we're definitely encouraged to be a lot more structured, like, you know, being creative and, you know, being artistic and bringing in other things is not necessary, you know, depending on where you're going, is not necessarily encouraged. It's, you know, how can you work through technology, and how can you basically gain everybody's attention without them having to work to understand where you're coming from? So it's like work for everybody else, but they don't have to, you know, work for how you're trying to express yourself, no matter if it's important or not. So at least my opinion, I would say that it is forced, but you can choose not to. You just may not get very far.
Yeah, because like speaking professionally to me is just the way of speaking so that most people can understand you, or all people can understand you. And I've tried it before where, you know, I'm around some friends and they don't speak the slang I speak, and I talk, you know, slang, and they're like, what did you say? What? And so to me, professional speaking is just speaking so everyone can understand. Any other comments or questions? Oh yeah. So as a Black woman or a black person growing up in America, if you don't grow up around people directly from Africa, you have nothing to identify with. You basically go off the stereotypes that you see on TV about how, like, they live in the jungle, and you see the starving kids on TV and stuff, and you're not proud to be African because you have nothing to grasp onto that's positive about Africa. Everything you see on TV is negative. You have no African friends that, you know, can influence you really. And so some black people, they want nothing to do with their African side. They don't identify with it at all. Since we were slaves, we don't really know what country we came from. So there's that part where we don't have a source to grasp onto. We don't have a specific culture or language. And so sometimes as an African American who isn't, you know, directly from Africa, it can be hard to identify with that African side, because you grow up and everything about Africa is negative. And it wasn't until college where, you know, I got to learn about African history. I got to have African friends, where I started to become proud of who I am. African people are beautiful, and Africa is beautiful despite what you see on TV. And so that's what I was talking about when I said that. Yes, we talk about these issues all the time in CAS. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we recently talked about the idea of blackness and what that meant, and acting black, acting white, not being put in a box, and creating your own identity. We've talked about rap music, and we went over lyrics and discussed that. We talked about skin tone, and a lot of other things.
Yeah, and you know, of course, for Mecha, I mean, we are, you know, because of our philosophy, we're definitely engaged in each other on that level of being Chicano, identifying that and what that means. But then we also have a good number of mujeres in our group too. And even nationally, when we do get together, we do hold gender caucuses where we, as you know, mujeres and hombres, they can get together and they can have a facilitator. They can discuss the issues that are going on with their groups as well, and then and do with it what they feel. And while also we also get together as a group, and we have that safe space as a group together because we are Chicanos, but then we can also break apart, and we're also Chicanos, but we're hombres, we're mujeres, we don't identify. We also have groups that don't identify, hombre, mujer. They have their own caucus if they choose to, their own facilitator. They can talk about issues that they're experiencing, because on a big level of, you know, of Chicano, there, I mean, we have a lot of issues as that identity within itself, and it is necessary to break into smaller groups to be able to talk about how they intersect and how our own experiences, and to be able to have that, to be able to say what's going on, like, at that time, or your experience, or anything that maybe you might not have been able to say to the larger group, because we do have so many voices there. We bring it down, they're smaller, the voices are more concentrated, and they're still there, and they can be shared afterwards. But in the meantime, we do allow that space for people to have a little bit, for people to have that that more centered, like, attention, to be able to focus on not just Chicanismo, but Chicanismo and what else it intersects with.
Yeah, and we discussed the African and African American topic before, and it can get pretty heated. And what I would like to see is, we have all these different cultural orgs. We have Council of African American Students. We have the Liberian students, have the African students. And what I would like to see is, we have a Black student union, and where all of us come together, because if anyone looks at me or any African student, they're not going to say, oh, they're Liberian, or oh, they're from Somalia. They're going to say, oh, they're Black. And so I think that it defeats the purpose of us being in college and being around all these people when we're just going to separate ourselves even further. And so I would like to, I'm not saying that we should get rid of all the orgs, but we do need to come together as Black students and teach and learn about each other.
Okay, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.